1.
Mr. Lloyd Fox, Reel 1. Could I ask you, first of all, Mr. Fox, about your background before the war started? This is World War I, of course, isn't it, we're talking
That's
about?
That's going back a long way.
It is, yes. But could you tell me something about your
well,
childhood?
Well, I had... finished about 2 years at Leeds University studying wool textiles with a view to my possibly being employed in our wool textile mill here in Wellington. And I had also had about 2 years, this is again is after leaving school, with accountants in Birmingham, because my family were private bankers in Somerset and Devon, and my father was chairman of the partners, and I knew he would like me to follow him in the bank if it proved suitable. You will see over there three bank notes. Framed.
Yes.
Yes. Those are the... Our banking firm had the right to issue notes, and we were the last of all the private banks in England to issue our own notes. And the note at the bottom there is the last note issued by any private bank in England, signed by my father.
What was the name of your father's bank?
Fox Fowler and Co. Headquarters in Wellington, and about 50 branches and agencies, Somerset, Devon, Cornwall.
Could you tell me something about your family? Did you come from a Quaker family?
Yes, just Quaker and Plymouth Brother. Though my father actually was what I've always called a pillar of the church. He was a church warden and read the lessons in church for about 40 years. But my mother... was a Pease, came from Darlington, and was a member of the Society of Friends. I have an idea you may have already interviewed Mrs. Rachel Cadbury.
Yes, that is so.
Well, she is my first cousin. Was my wife's... No. Well, we had a common grandmother. And she is about 3 months younger than I am. You went to Birmingham to see her.
That's right, and I believe she mentioned you in the interview.
I
you came into
did.
Her story.
We've known each other for very many years.
Before the war started, before 1914, did you think about war and peace? Had you sort of explored your attitude?
No, not in the least, no. I think I always regarded war as a bit of an adventure. I used to read Conan Doyle's war stories, as well, of course, as his Sherlock Holmes stories, but He wrote some quite good war stories as well. I forget the names, but... No, I had no idea when war broke out that the question of whether one wanted to kill people or not, all that I wanted when war broke out was to get to the war as quick as possible before it ended.
How old would you have been when the war broke out?
20, I think.
Did you try to enlist, you know, having that feeling? Did you try to get into the forces?
As soon as war was declared, I wrote to the War Office and offered my services with my Douglas motorbike as a dispatch rider. I had a sort of boyish idea that I could get to France and do something in the war without having to go through all the trouble of being drilled and disciplined. I had always avoided, partly at my mother's request and partly at my own feeling, I'd always avoided joining an OTC corps. It was not compulsory at school and I didn't join. My mother was very strong on peace. But the War Office were rather slow in accepting my offer of myself for my motorbike. Sometime, I think about November, they wrote and said they would be glad if I would report somewhere. But by that time, I had already joined the FAU, so that put paid to that.
Yes. Could you tell me about the FAU and when you first heard about it? Can you remember how this came about?
Well, I knew it was being run partly by members of the Society of Friends and certainly for members or others who didn't wish to serve in the army or the services. I knew Philip Baker vaguely, who was largely responsible for it, and as soon as I heard the unit was being formed, and it took me a little time to hear about it. I wasn't in time for the, so to speak, first draft at all. But I think I joined the FAU about September 14, and I remember being interviewed by Sir George Newman, who was head of the education department in the government. I forget his exact name, but he was an important gentleman in Whitehall, and I went to see him, and he interviewed me and passed me for service in the unit, and in due course I went, I think in about the beginning of December, to a training course which was being held at the at the ambulance headquarters in Vere Street. It wasn't anything really to do with the Friends ambulance unit, but they were undertaking the training, and I went there and took the fortnight's first aid, and we used to attend the London Hospital, which interested me a lot. I went to see operations done, the idea being that you must get accustomed to seeing blood if you wanted to go into the ambulance service, and I don't know whether I was extra bloodthirsty, but it merely amused and interested me very much to see people being operated on. And I was put in charge of squads who went down to the London Hospital, because it was known that I wasn't going to faint when I saw blood and could help anybody who felt that way inclined. And we worked in the outpatients department, doing all sorts of jobs, very primitive business, I think, by modern standards. The London Hospital, of course, was down in the East End and near the docks, serving a very poverty-stricken area of London. I think I'm digressing, probably.
No, I think this is very interesting, because I imagine that sort of area would have been quite new to you, would it?
Oh, yes, very much so, yes. I didn't know London at all until then. Quite new. What? We used to go for route marches with all sorts of army recruits. I remember going a long route march all the way up the Edgware Road and round Hampstead Heath, I think, and back again. Several hundred of us were. The FAU only provided a small squad in a large number of other recruits.
Did you wear a uniform then?
Oh, no, I hadn't got to a uniform then.
But later on you had one, did you?
Oh, yes, I did. The next stage was I was asked to sign a form that I was prepared to serve abroad with the FAU and to look after typhoid patients. That apparently some of the recruits weren't prepared to do, but I realized that my chances of getting abroad would be improved by saying yes, I would look after typhoid. So I did. My mother was rather annoyed and said I should, it was quite unnecessary.
Did you get special training for typhoid cases? Did they give you special training?
No, not at all. No, nothing. Nothing in the least. I didn't know what a typhoid case was like then. I met them all right later on.
During this early period, while you were still in Britain, did you have to go before a tribunal?
I did go before a tribunal, yes.
Could you tell me about that, please? Whatever you can remember about it.
Well, I was very annoyed at having to do it, because the War Office had given me exemption from army service as a member of the Friends Ambulance Unit. I think local people in Wellington wanted to hear my views, so to speak, and no doubt tell me what a a poor type I was by that time to be holding the view that I didn't want to kill anybody. However, the War Office, they gave me a limited exemption, which was overridden by the War Office, and I remained in the FAU. And in January, I was due to go to France with my brother to join the FAU, who were then working in Dunkirk.
Before you tell me about that, could I ask you about public opinion, you know, the reaction of the people you knew to the fact that you were a pacifist, a conscientious objector? Did you suffer much hostility or rudeness because of it?
Yes, a certain amount. I didn't receive white feathers, I didn't receive offensive letters, but certainly there were local people who wouldn't speak to me, among them very prominently the Vicar of Wellington, in spite of the fact that my father was his church warden, he wouldn't speak to me.
Did that worry you?
Oh?
Did it worry you that people...
Yes, it did. Yes, certainly. A bit. By that time I had made up my mind that I was a Christian pacifist. I don't know what I am now. I was firmly convinced then that right would prevail, that the Lord would see Britain winning the war simply because they would look after their chosen, and that there was no real need to fight. I think it was a very juvenile approach to it, really. I hadn't thought it out beyond the fact that I didn't particularly want to kill people, and that the opportunity offered to get to France by the FAU as quickly as possible. And in January I got flu up in London at the end of the period of London training, and had several very miserable days in a large hostel fighting the flu. And then just as I was recovering, they called me in for typhoid inoculation, and I very foolishly, as it turned out, went ahead and had the typhoid inoculation, but that meant all the flu symptoms came back again, and I was quite unfit to go to France when the when my draft came along, and it took me 2 or 3 months really to recover. I think they thought I was going to have TB or something of that sort. It settled on my chest anyway, and I was seen by a Bristol specialist who said he couldn't pass me as fit for active service. Go back to your firm making cloth in Wellington and do your bit by making cloth. Well, I wasn't going to have anything to do with that. I applied to the unit for any work they could give me on the home front, and within a month or two they wrote and invited me to join the headquarters staff in London. And with my accountancy training, I occupied the proud position, I suppose, of chief accountant to the budding unit.
Was it growing at this time? You know, was the FAU getting bigger?
What?
Was it growing?
The unit was growing steadily. I was still at the unit office was in Vere Street at that time, at the headquarters of the I think it was a Red Cross headquarters. I know there was a fearsome lady in charge of it, and the other people in the unit had got across this woman good and proper, and I was deputed to take over and see if I could get on with her where they had failed. And yet from then on, she said she didn't want to see any of the members of the staff except myself. And I thought that's all fine. And she was a Cantley. I don't suppose the name would mean anything to you.
No, what was the name? Sorry.
Cantley. She was Red Cross or St. John's. I think Red Cross. Sir James Cantley was a London doctor who took ambulance courses, and I had already attended his lectures as part of the training.
Would that be Cantley?
L-I-E.
L-I-E.
I'm pretty sure.
Who would have been the other FAU people at headquarters? You know, the people sort of running the FAU. Who would they have been? Were any of the Cadburys involved?
No. At the London headquarters, there was an ex-army captain, Captain Little, and his wife. And they were in charge of the London End, and a very pleasant couple to work with, but no idea really of running an office at all.
I was wondering also about the money, where the money was coming from.
Well, the money came from donations, and almost entirely from donations, but I had the job, of course, of sending bills to all the members of the unit for their uniform requirements and that sort of thing. And
They had to pay for their own, did they?
Oh, yes, they had to pay for their own, yes.
Did they receive any pay, any pocket money, in World War One?
No, I don't think so. I can't remember that they did. I didn't need it, although I only had a very small allowance from my father. But when jumping on a bit after a year at the headquarters, I began to make strenuous efforts to get away from London. I volunteered for service on a hospital ship that the unit was staffing for service, I think, in the Gulf of all places. I was told that it would be a horrible hot climate. However, that came to nothing. They wouldn't let me go. That was the trouble. They said, you are now in charge of the unit's finances and you can't be spared. And that went on for about 18 months, I suppose. And then a chartered accountant applied to join the unit under the conscription business. And I said, you apply for my job and I'll go to France and you can have my job and stay at home. He was a married man and didn't want to go abroad. So the FAU accepted that. Then I had to square the personnel office to avoid being medically examined, but I'd been working in the same room in London with the personnel man, and I said to him, you can see I'm quite fit, but I don't want to have to have another medical. And he passed me through without a medical. So I was one of the few people who, I suppose, went to France who never had really a medical. An adequate medical test, because at that time I was still supposed to be unfit.
Before I ask you about going to France, I wonder if you could tell me something about the COs that you were meeting while you were in London. Did you get any idea of how many there were coming through in World War One, and what they had to put up with, you know, what the conditions then were for people who were COs?
Well, when conscription started, we had a flood of applications, and it wasn't part of my job really, but other people in the FAU office were overwhelmed with applications, and I used to spend, well, for several months I think I was always at the office till about 9 o'clock at night.